जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, 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 यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, यशोदानंदन 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 ब्रज जन रंजना, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, Yashodanandana Gajajanaranjana. Yashodanandana Gajajanaranjana. Yashodanandana Gajajanaranjana. Yashodanandana Gajajanaranjana. Yashodanandana Gajajanaranjana. Yashodanandana Gajajanaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Jai Om Vishnupad Param Sarajikacharya Stotra Shatra Shri Srimad Srila Vaishnanarin Bhakti Viranta Swami Maharaj Srila Gopad Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Srila Thakur Haridas Ki Jai. Prem Sakoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Sham Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Orthan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Ganga Devi Ki Jai. Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulasimani Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Harinama Sankirtana Ki Jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. ISKCON BBT Samsthapak Acharya Srila Gopad Ki Jai. Go Premanandi. All glory Sri Samul Devotees. All glory Sri Samul Devotees. All glory Sri Samul Devotees. All glory to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानाधिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेश पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 5 एंटाइटल्ड प्रहलाद महाराज द सेंटली सन ऑफ हिरण्यकशिपु। टुडे वी विल रीड टेक्स्ट 1 बट फर्स्ट आई विल रीड द चैप्टर समरी। प्रहलाद महाराज डिड नॉट कैरी आउट द ऑर्डर्स ऑफ हिज टीचर्स फॉर ही वाज ऑलवेज एंगेज्ड इन वर्शिपिंग लॉर्ड विष्णु एज डिस्क्राइब्ड इन दिस चैप्टर। Hiranyakashipu tried to kill Prahlad Maharaj, even by having a snake bite him and by putting him under the feet of elephants, yet he was unsuccessful. Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master Shukracharya had two sons named Shanda and Amarka, to whom Prahlad Maharaj was entrusted for education. Although the teachers tried to educate the boy Prahlad in politics, economics, and other material activities, he did not care for their instructions. Instead, he continued to be a pure devotee. Prahlad Maharaj never liked the idea of discriminating between one's friends and enemies. Because he was spiritually inclined, he was equal toward everyone. Once upon a time, Hiranyakashipu inquired from his son what the best thing was that he had learned from his teachers. Prahlad Maharaj replied that a man engrossed in the material consciousness of duality, thinking this is mine and that belongs to my enemy, should give up his householder life and go to the forest to worship the Supreme Lord. When Hiranyakashipu heard from his son about devotional service, he decided that this small boy had been polluted by some friend in school. Thus he advised the teachers to take care of the boy so that he would not become a Krishna-conscious devotee. However, when the teachers inquired from Prahlad Maharaj why he was going against their teachings, Prahlad Maharaj taught the teachers that the mentality of ownership is false and that he was therefore trying to become an unalloyed devotee of Lord Vishnu. The teachers, being very angry at this answer, chastised and threatened the boy with many fearful conditions. They taught him to the best of their ability and then brought him before his father. Hiranyakashipu affectionately took his son Prahlad on his lap and then inquired from him what the best thing was that he had learned from his teachers. As usual, Prahlad Maharaj began praising the 9 processes of devotional service, such as Shravanam and Kirtanam. Thus the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, being extremely angry, chastised the teachers, Shanda and Amarka, for having wrongly trained Prahlad Maharaj. The so-called teachers informed the king that Prahlad Maharaj was automatically a devotee and did not listen to their instructions. When they proved themselves innocent, Hiranyakashipu inquired from Prahlad where he had learned Vishnu Bhakti. Prahlad Maharaj replied that those who are attached to family life do not develop Krishna consciousness, either personally or collectively. Instead, they suffer repeated birth and death in this material world and cannot and continue simply chewing the chewed. Prahlad explained that the duty of every man is to take shelter of a pure devotee and thus become eligible to understand Krishna consciousness. Enraged at this answer, Hiranyakashipu threw Prahlad Maharaj from his lap. Since Prahlad was so treacherous that he had become a devotee of Vishnu, who had killed his uncle Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu asked his assistants to kill him. The assistants of Hiranyakashipu struck Prahlad Maharaj with sharp weapons, threw him under the feet of elephants, subjected him to hellish conditions, threw him from the peak of a mountain, and tried to kill him in thousands of other ways. But they were unsuccessful. Hiranyakashipu therefore became increasingly afraid of his son Prahlad Maharaj and arrested him. The sons of Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master Shukracharya began teaching Prahlad in their own way, but Prahlad did not accept their instructions. While the teachers were absent from the classroom, Prahlad Maharaj began to preach Krishna consciousness in the school. And by his instructions, all his class friends, the sons of the demons, became devotees like him. Text number 1. Shri Narada Uvacha Paurohityaya Bhagavan Vritah Kavyah Kilasurehi Shandamar Kausutao Tasya Deityaraja Grihantike. Shri Narada Uvacha Paurohityaya Bhagavan Vritah Kavyah Kilasurehi Shandamar Kausutao Tasya Deityaraja Grihantike. Shri Narada Uvacha Paurohityaya Bhagavan Vritakavya Kilasurehi Shandamar Kausutao Tasya Deityaraja Grihantike.
Oh.
Sri Narada Uvacha, the great Saint Narad said, Paurohityaya, to work as a priest, Bhagavan, the most powerful, Vrataha, chosen, Kavyaha, Shukracharya, Kila, indeed, Asuraihi, by the demons, Shanda Amarka, Shanda and Amarka, Sutao, sons, Tasya, of him, Daityaraja, of the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, Griha Antike, near the residence. Translation. The great saint Narad Muni said, the demons, headed by Hiranyakashipu, accepted Shukracharya as their priest for ritualistic ceremonies. Shukracharya's two sons, Shanda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakashipu's palace. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The beginning of the life story of Prahlad is recounted as follows. Shukracharya became the priest of the atheists, especially Hiranyakashipu. And thus, his two sons, Shanda and Amarka, resided near Hiranyakashipu's residence. Shukracharya should not have become the priest of Hiranyakashipu because Hiranyakashipu and his followers were all atheists. A Brahmana should become the priest of a person interested in the advancement of spiritual culture. The very name Shukracharya, however, indicates a person interested in obtaining benefit for his sons and descendants, regardless of how the money comes. A real Brahmana would not become a priest for atheistic men. Om Agnanatimirantasya Gnananjanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutapadakamadam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Shri Narada Uvacha, Paurohityaya Bhagavan Vrata Kavya Kilasurehi Shandam Arkausata Uttasya Daitya Raja Grihantike. The great saint Narad Muni said, the demons headed by Hiranyakashipu accepted Shukracharya as their priest for ritualistic ceremonies. Shukracharya's two sons, Shanda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakashipu's palace. Here we see the beginning of the destruction of proper Vedic civilization in the corruption of the Brahmana class. Srila Prabhupada has written us a nice chapter summary here, and it seems to be based largely on comments by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sridhar Swami, the latter of which says, Panchame guru to adhitam tyaktva vishnu sutauratam ghatayan dvipasarapadyai sutam daityo nachashakat. That means that here in the fifth canto, what's being discussed is what Prahlad learned when he was instructed by Narad Muni. And after completing that instruction, his offering of glorification of Lord Vishnu, and consequently Hiranyakashipu's attempt to kill him, particularly by dvipas and sarpas. Anybody know what that is? What's a dvipa and what is a sarpa? Dvipa means someone who has, he drinks through his, well, he has two ways of drinking. He drinks through his mouth and he also drinks through his trunk. So it's an elephant. Dvipa. Sometimes they're called padapa as well, like a tree. How does a tree drink? Through its feet. Padapa. And similarly, the elephant has a fifth foot, which is considered to be his trunk. If need be, he can rest on it. And he drinks that way. So that's elephant. And sarpa means sripati, the creature who is writhing on the ground. Who's that? Snakes. And these are the two means that have been mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in his chapter summary. Hiranyakashipu engaged these two to try to kill his son, but he was unsuccessful. Ashakat. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur similarly says, Gurunad dhyapitaha pitra prishtaha krishnam stuvan sutaha. His son, after being asked by his father what had he learned from his spiritual master, he glorified Krishna. In this fifth canto, we find the same thing. Except he attempted to kill him. Virtually, he should have been killed, hatopi. But swastiya rajata. Panchame diggajad jaisa hatopi swastiya rajata. Prahlad Maharaj continued to shine. Sometimes when a person is too successful, others become envious and they want to check his shining, the word is used here, arajita. That's called envy, actually. Sridhar Swami defines envy for us in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Where is envy mentioned at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam? Anybody know? Nirmatsara. So he says, matsara, the meaning of matsara is parotkarsha asahasa. You're unable to tolerate when another person is coming up in the world. Unable to tolerate that. So this is the nature of the demon, naturally. So even though he should have been killed by all the thousands of means, Prabhupada writes, that Hiranyakashipu employed to try to kill him, including even snakes and elephants, still he wasn't killed. So, Vishwanath continues, Prahladasya bhaktireva viddishe karanam iti vaktamaha. He, paurohitya yetyadina. He speaks this verse and other verses just to illustrate what is the reason that Hiranyakashipu was so envious of his son that he tried 1,000 times to kill him. How long of a prison sentence would you get if you were convicted of 1,000 attempted murders? Just think about it. So
Bhagavad Bhaktireva Karanam. The reason is only his bhakti for the Lord. So Kavya here means Shukracharya, that's clear, also from the translation. Atas tasya sutao daityaraja grihantike nyavatatamiti shesha. That means that his sons, Kavya's sons, Shukracharya's sons, they were living just near the house of Daityaraj. What else have we got here? One minor acharya adds another idea here. That, Viragavacharya says it. Evam aprishta dvesha nimittas, when questioned about by his father, the real source or the cause of Hiranyakashipu's envy became revealed. Tadvaktum tavad upodghatam aha. He speaks this verse to illustrate what is the reason that he tried to murder his son. Who is speaking? Bhagavan Narada. Bhagavan Kavya Shukra. Paurohityaya means purohita karma kartum asuraivrtaha. Kileti prasiddhim dyotayasi tasya kavyasya sutauya. Okay, so he says here that paurohityaya means for the purpose of being engaged as a purohita. What does purohita mean? Priest. And particularly, literally, it means the person that you put forward. Pura hita. Pura means you advance this person. You put him forward as your leader, the person in whom you repose your faith. He is your purohita. And this is where it gets significant, because here the words are used in the verse. Vrita kavya kilasurehi. Very significant. Who employed Kavya in this capacity? Asurai, by the demons. And therefore the word kila is used. Kila means indeed, as if to express some wonder at this. How is it that even a brahmana like Shukracharya would be engaged by the demons? This is the idea. Those who are brahmanas, either by birth or by qualification, if we allow ourselves to be chosen by the demons or to be engaged by the demons, then you have to think about that, don't you, when you read this passage of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's expressing wonder that how could this person do this? So similarly, Srila Prabhupada is writing in his purport here, Shukracharya should not have become the priest of Hiranyakashipu, because Hiranyakashipu and his followers were all atheists. A brahmana should become the priest of a person interested in the advancement of spiritual culture. So we should be very careful not to allow the demons to engage us and not to allow our lives to be dictated by those who do not have our own concerns, nor even their own concerns at heart. This is the unfortunate reality of the modern day and age. Even those who are most powerful, they're not really even thinking of their own welfare, and they're certainly not thinking of yours. So we should be very careful not to trust such persons and not to allow such persons to engage us. This is the revolutionary nature of really any religion, because all religion is suspicious of such people. That's why it's disallowed. Now, when I was in college, I was in the Department of South Asian Language and Literature at the University of Washington. And, you know, if you attempt to write your PhD in a mode that is sympathetic to Krishna Bhakti, you'll quickly find that someone else gets funded. So, you know, in this way, that anybody who's trying to push God in the modern world in any context, practically speaking, it's simply not allowed. It's prohibited. And this was this case with Prahlad Maharaj, because he went to a school that was run by the sons of Shukracharya, who had allowed himself to become employed by the demons, and who had allowed their agenda to become his agenda. Therefore, Shanda and Amarka, although presumably they're Brahmins, they were very angry when Prahlad was saying what a Brahmin should say, that you should become absorbed in the Parambrahman, that is to say, Krishna or Vishnu. So, Srila Prabhupada, he says that a Brahmin should become the priest of a person who's interested in spiritual advancement. Now, we live in a society where hardly anyone is interested in spiritual advancement, isn't it? What is that? Balastavad kridasaktaha. When you are a child, your only concern is what? Playing. And when you get to your youthful maturity, then what is your only concern? Huh? The opposite, youthful mature person. Tarunastavat tarunisakta. Then by the time you reach old age, vridhastavat chintasakta, you become completely absorbed in your own miseries. Or you become worried about protecting your assets, because when you start losing it, everybody moves in. This is love in the material world. But pare brahmani gopina sakta. At no time is anybody interested in this supreme Brahman. This is the problem. This is the nature of this material world, and especially in the Kali Yuga, it only gets worse and worse and worse. Speaking of Chinta Shakta, in Vrindavan on the wall, I saw it written there. Chinta Matkara Chintana Kijiye. That means don't worry about all of your material life, just meditate on Krishna. Only in Vrindavan can you find such a thing. Anyway, so Pare Brahmani Kopina Sakta, it's not even allowed. Nobody's inclined. And even if you are inclined, it's discouraged. You're punished, in effect, if you try to push Vishnu too much in this yuga and in this world even generally. So how does a Brahmin become the priest of a person interested in the advancement of spiritual culture if no one's really interested in spiritual culture? Who has some answers for this? What do we do about this? Huh? You have to make them interested. And how do you make them interested? Huh? You have to educate them. And how do you educate people? Okay. You distribute books. You distribute prasadam. You perform Harinam Sankirtan. These are the means. Anything else? Think about what Krishna instructs in, if you become Krishna conscious, yad acharati shreshtas tatareveto janaha. When you become shreshta, either through age or through material qualifications, because sometimes that's what it takes to become shreshta in this world. People don't know anything spiritual, so if they like the way you sing, then they turn you into a guru. Or if you're donating more money, then you become, in charge. So many material qualifications are dominating. So, shreshta, but whatever, however you become shreshta, anything you do, people are going to accept this is the pramana. This is what should be done, whether it's bogus or not. Therefore, you have to be very, very careful. We were discussing this last night. Pitana sasyat, janina sasyat, Guru nasasyat, right? Pitaro nasasyat, ityadi. Bhagavatam says you should not become a spiritual master. You should not become a leader of any sort. You should not become even a father and a mother if you're not able to elevate your dependence spiritually. So, a real Brahmin should be a person who creates that interest in spiritual culture, and he does so by his own example. He doesn't demand respect, but his character commands respect. He's Gunayanam, as we discussed the other day. So, now this wasn't Shukracharya's character. Prabhupada continues, he says, The very name Shukracharya, however, indicates a person interested in obtaining benefits for his sons and descendants. Why? Shukracharya. Acharya means a person who is acting in a very deliberate way. What is he acting for? Shukra, his family line. Shukra means literally semen. So actually in Srila Prabhupada's books, he validates two kinds of disciplic succession. One is called the Guru Parampara, and the other one is called the Shukra Parampara. In Vrindavan, we see that in the major temples, the practice has traditionally been that it's a family succession from father to son. There are advantages in that system, although there are also disadvantages. In any system, there are advantages and disadvantages. But it was the kings of Jaipur who initially advised the disciples and descendants of the disciples of the six Goswamis that if your sons are doing it, then you know it's going to go on. If you've got a disciple doing it, well, he can bloop. So, but a son can never bloop. You cannot do that. You can estrange yourself, but you're always the son. And traditional Indian society has enough understanding of the way samskar works that it's just unthinkable to dissociate yourself from your parents in this way. Anyway, that is the Shukra Sampradaya, but the weakness of that system is that all you have to do is be born. And then automatically you know you're going to inherit the Acharya position, or you're going to become the next Pujari, or you don't really have to work hard. And in fact, as I said, any system can be exploited. In our system as well of Guru Parampara, it's really, nobody really knows if you're really Krishna conscious or not. You can put on a good show. It's pretty easy to do that. As I said, all you have to have is some material qualifications, and everybody takes it that you're spiritually advanced. And so this goes on either way, but here we're talking about Shukracharya. This was his interest. And Prabhupada adds in the final phrase here, regardless of how the money comes. So even he was working for a demon, being paid in the employ of Hiranyakashipu, of all persons, the biggest demon of them all. But he accepted that. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport here by saying, a real Brahmana would not become the priest for atheistic men. And the implicit instruction here for us, since he's mentioned it twice, is that do not do this. Don't do this. Don't follow that parampara. So there's a couple of interesting factoids here given by one of the minor acharyas. He says, Shandascha markascha shandar markao atra dirgha chandasaha shando marka iti vede shravanat. That means that these two sons of Kavya, the two sons of Shukracharya, their names are Shanda and Marka. We generally hear Shanda and Amarka. His argument is that this is so, we've lengthened the vowel for metrical purposes, but it's heard in the Vedas. There's mention of Shanda and Marka in the Vedas. That's one opinion. Not a very particularly essential point, but it's just something we can think about. I think the main thing of interest here is that Shukracharya, somehow he accepted a position of employment within the on the payroll of such a demon as Hiranyakashipu. And a Brahmin actually should not have a salary. He can be maintained. Traditionally, the system of maintaining brahmanas was that the king would give them everything they need. As far as real estate goes, this is called agrahara, thing that you take in, agrahara, in front of you. There are still many places in India, they're fast dwindling, the neighborhoods where the brahmanas live, because they've been gifted that land by the former kings. Nowadays, we don't have kings anymore. But this was previously the system. Either way, it works out to the same thing. Whoever is supporting you, as they say in Hindi, you're eating that person's salt, that you have to do that person's bidding. And so this is always a constant challenge for the brahmanas. And here it would seem that Shukracharya has sold out. He's given up his principles and he's just doing the comfortable thing. Human life is actually not meant for this kind of comfort. It's meant for tapasya. We find this throughout our shastras ubiquitously. Yajna dana tapascheva pavanani manishinaha. Three things in particular Krishna says you should never give up. What are they? Who knows? Sacrifice, charity, austerity. And austerity in particular is the wealth of the brahmana. It is the brahmana's mandate to be austere. Otherwise, he becomes a party man like this. And when a Brahmin sells out, he's got superior intelligence. He can do a lot of damage. And just see the damage that Shukracharya has done to the entire class. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj, we mentioned this the other day, he prays to the Lord, Prasidatam brahmakulam gavam cha janardanas sanucharas cha mahyam. That means, may Janardhan be kindly disposed on the entire class of brahmanas, and may he also be kindly disposed on the entire population of cows on which human society depends, and may he also be very kind upon humble me. Very beautiful prayer he gives. So how the varnashram system is corrupted is exhibited quite nicely here. A person for his own selfish interest or even for the sake of comfort, or as they say, necessity knows no law. When a person is in dire straits, sometimes a person will compromise his principles. But this is not a good thing. And it does a lot of damage, not only for the person who is compromising, but for the whole society. Because nothing you do is unrelated to everything else that goes on in the society. Anything you do affects everyone else always, anywhere and always. This is just the nature of reality. You can say that dharma is the science of sambandha, the science of relations, and we're always related in one way. I like to say this is a symbiosis. It's a system in which everyone is interdependent and requires one another. Cooperative system. So we can learn maybe about how to avoid this from Bilva Mangala Thakur. He has written a very beautiful verse. He says, Tarkeshu karkashadhyo vayameva yavat. You can have very stern thought in matters of debate or in polemics or in philosophical concerns. You should have very critical, keen thought. That's an asset. And he says, Sahitye komaladhya. You can have very sensitive thought when it comes to literature. Here, the name of Shukracharya used is what? Huh? Kavya. And what does kavya mean? Poetry. Poetry. So he was of that school. The higher class brahmana is the person who is absorbed in Brahman, the person who's thinking about spiritual teachings. A lesser class of brahmana is the person who's intellectual, maybe not 100% spiritual, but he's still, you know, the Germans have a nice word for this. They call it, Geist, you know, things that are, you know, metaphysical, spiritual, but also intellectual, you know, these kinds of things. So it's not completely transcendental, but still it's pretty far up there. And Brahmins are sometimes they're doing that also. So Shukracharya, evidently he was a second-class Brahmana, and maybe less than that, because after all he did sell out his virtues. And when you lose your virtues, everything is gone. It's a hopeless, wasted life at that point. But Sahitye komaladhya, vayameva yavat. You can have sensitive thought in literature, and tantre nirantaradhyo vayameva yavat. You can have ceaseless thought to your responsibilities, tantra, to your duties in life. Krishne niveshita dhiyo vayameva tavat. Only to the extent that you have invested your attention fully in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. This was Shukracharya's downfall. He wasn't a devotee. He didn't make Krishna the center of his existence and the purpose of his activities. He was not fulfilling the Lord's desire. He was fulfilling his own needs or his family needs. He prioritized that above the mission of the Lord. Therefore, he could not help Hiranyakashipu, even though he became his priest, because Hiranyakashipu wasn't interested in spiritual culture, and ultimately, Shukracharya was not interested in spiritual culture either. He had fallen from the real standard. So this is the beginning of the destruction of the Varnashram system. It can only work when Krishna is in the center. As soon as you remove Krishna, then immediately the whole thing becomes a system of interdependent mutual exploitation. And that's called the caste system. And everybody, especially Indians, know very well, we don't want that. So the key to avoiding that is to it's not to throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. Sometimes people, even Srila Prabhupada, in his books, he will argue very eloquently how this is not possible in Kali Yuga, to reestablish the Varnashram system. It's true. It's not. For that matter, for your information, it's not possible to do anything else that we're attempting in Krishna consciousness either. To go back to Godhead, to join the dance party of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, how likely is that? Not very likely in this age of Kali Yuga. But at the same time that Srila Prabhupada is admitting that it's hardly possible to revive Varnashram Dharma, he's dedicating so many, the increasing trend of his thought in his later years is to urge very clearly and strongly this kind of development only. It's kind of like his own spiritual master from whom he got it. And Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur, where did he get it from? He got it from his own spiritual master, or rather his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. For the last 100 years in our sampradaya, for the last century, our acharyas have been pushing on this point. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mainly was pushing on two things. His preaching focused on two classes. One was the caste Goswamis, and the other one was the Sahajiyas. Most of his preaching efforts were aimed at those groups. And to a lesser extent also the Mayavadis, because Ramakrishna Mission was just getting started at that time. Oops, I shouldn't have mentioned it. But there was an impersonalist mission getting started at that point. And, you know, that was a problem as well. But what was the point I was going to make? The system of Varnashram is not really feasible, but at the same time, we're instructed to do it, yeah. In exactly the same way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has written a very nice essay, which is fairly well noted. You can find it, at least some of it you can find on the internet. Whatever's not there, you can find in this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, a nice biography about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur written by Bhaktivikas Swami. Very nicely written. The essay is called Putana. Has anybody read this? You're familiar with the essay? In this essay, he's very eloquently arguing how the very worst thing for any kind of religion is to organize that religion into an institution. And he's writing this at the time that he's working extremely hard to establish a religious institution in the form of Gaudiya Math. It would seem as if it were a contradiction, especially since the Gaudiya Math didn't work. But this is the point that I'm making, that it doesn't really matter. What we are doing here is bhakti yoga, not fruitive activity. And we are to follow our instructions only. And we've been given the instructions very clearly. And when one deviates from that principle, then one has to exploit others. As soon as Krishna is not sitting on the center in the throne of your heart, then you have to put someone else there. your family members, your whoever it is, or whatever it is, your career maybe, everything that people put on the throne in this world, those things become your deity in effect. Therefore, it's stated in the 11th canto, Bhaktyaika Yesham Guru Devatatma. The way that a person performs bhakti yoga is by accepting the orders of the spiritual master as his life and soul, Atma, his deity, Devata, Guru Devatatma, means his worshipful deity, his very life and soul, his very self, as it were. This is the point. As soon as we deviate from the order of the spiritual master, then all bets are off. We can't know what will happen after that. This is why Srila Prabhupada in particular used to stress this principle of vyavasayatmika buddhi, focused, ekagrachitra buddhi. Ekagrachitta means fixed on one point, attention on the order of the spiritual master. He was in large part inspired to come to America and give this process of Krishna consciousness to all of us because he was so much impressed by the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text number 41. Is that the correct number? Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bohushakha hinantashta buddhayo avyavasayinam. A devotee understanding that to worship Krishna is to worship Krishna's devotee. He accepts the order given to him by Krishna's devotee, his spiritual master, as his life and soul, as his worshipful deity, as his purpose in life. And because Prabhupada was able to do that, he also had an impossible task ahead of him, did he not? Everything working against him. But he was successful by Krishna's grace. In chapter 18, Krishna tells us, Mat chitta sarva durgani, mat prasada tirshyasi. Ata chetva mahankara nashroshyasi vinangshyasi. That means that all obstacles, sarva durgani, you will cross over them. Don't worry. You will cross over them by my grace. But if you don't listen to me, if out of false ego, oh, I can't do this, or I don't want to do this, or I'm not a devotee, or whatever it is. If you act in that way, Krishna says, you are toast. Well burnt toast. Deep fried, you can say. So this is the point. Here we can learn, in the Bhagavatam, there are two ways that we learn. We learn the proper thing to do, and we learn also what not to do. And here we can see Shukracharya's mistake. He sold out. He decided to ignore the fact that he was a demon, or maybe he rationalized it in his mind. Well, you know, it's the nature of the age. What can you do? You have to, you know, have to compromise. You know, this is the idea. This is how Maya gets us, by infecting the intelligence. Intelligence is already infected. She doesn't have to add anything that's not there already. What does Krishna say about the disease of lust? Where is it sitting? Where is your enemy sitting? He's captured three strategic positions within your mind-body complex. Well, this is Bhagavad Gita. If we're reading Bhagavad Gita, we should know this. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence. So when the intelligence is infected by our own desires, and what better instrument to infect the intelligence than what you want? It's usually not a matter of convincing someone rationally, is it? It's usually a matter of the person has some other desire. See? So when our intelligence is overwhelmed by our desires, or when our senses are overwhelmed by our desires, or when our mind is overwhelmed by the principle of material desire, because that's all that the mind can do, it's a toggle switch. It either goes spiritual or goes material. So when we're overwhelmed like this, then we fall in exactly the same. We sell out, and we have the same result that Shukracharya had. Shukracharya. So we should not do this. This is the point. What else can we say about this? He took up priestly. Oh yeah. priestly work for the demons. This is the Karmakandia class of brahmanas. They're only interested in performing rituals and helping people to worship demigods to fulfill their desires. And even in India now, people are not doing this so much because they found it more profitable to worship the transnational corporations that employ them. And they find it more worthy investment of their energy to study C++ instead of Sanskrit. But once in Mauritius, we still have this class of Brahmins who actually work in this way, and it's a very thriving business there. I once talked to one of these pundits in Mauritius, and we were just talking, and he, of course, he knows everything about Krishna consciousness. He told me frankly, said, we know everything. We know that Krishna is the supreme. We know that the purpose of life is not, you know, just this Karmakandia stuff. We know all these things. We know it. But we've got an obligation to meet our family necessities. And after all, this is what people want, so we're only giving them what they want. This is the same logic that you hear from drug pushers, isn't it? You people are buying all the cocaine. What do you expect us? What's our economy in Mexico or in, you know, Colombia or whatever? You know, we're just giving you what you want. There was a famous case in the legal system many years ago of one guy who has a big pornographic magazine. So he was taken to court for indecency. And his argument was like this: I'm just supplying what people want. And it's true. You can't argue with it. It is what people want. But a Brahmin should not fall victim to this temptation. That's the point. Therefore, this one verse that we can finish with here that is significant. Janmana jayate shudra. In this age, everybody is, by default, you're a shudra. And shudra means somebody who's constantly whining and complaining and blaming others for his station. That is according to Shankaracharya. Shochati. In Bhagavad Gita, the symptoms of the Brahman is that he doesn't have this. Na shochati na kankshati. So shudra means we're dissatisfied. There's no such thing as a dissatisfied brahmana. As soon as a brahmana is dissatisfied, he's, you know, because of some material necessity or want, he's finished. He's not a brahmana. So janmana jayate shudra. Samskara tu bhavet dvija. By samskaras, one becomes twice born. One of the samskaras in particular is initiation. And a person gets a sacred thread, then he's considered to be dvija. Just like we heard dvipa, so this is dvija. Ja means to be born. So, vedapathat bhavet vipra. He doesn't become a learned scholar until he has studied the Vedic literatures. But he doesn't really become a Brahman until brahma janati iti brahmanaha. When he knows Brahman, then he's a Brahmana. And we described this already. Brahmabhuta prasannatma. He's constantly in bliss. He's satisfied. He's joyful. This is his nature. And na shochati, he's not whining or complaining, blaming others. Na kankshati, he's not pushed around by his desires or his aspirations, ambitions. Na shochati, na kankshati. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Therefore, he can view everyone equally. Because he's got nothing to gain or lose from anybody else or from any other interaction. Krishna says, mad bhaktim labhate param. In that condition, he gets mad bhakti, my devotional service, pure devotional service. Only in that condition. We know this from the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the beginning, it's clearly stated that this Bhagavatam kicks out all Kaitava Dharma. It's meant only for the nirmatsara, the unenvious. But it's a high qualification. In the verses just prior to this one, in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has described what are the characteristics of that person who is Brahmabhuta. It's a tall order. It's not so easy to attain that. Therefore, we work at it in Krishna consciousness. We're chanting every day. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Because Krishna says param bhakti, real bhakti, or transcendental bhakti, it only comes when we're liberated. We have to become liberated. Now, the process of bhakti itself will liberate us. Again, Bhava Mangala Thakur has written so nicely, Bhaktis Twayi Sthiratara Bhagavan Yadi Syat Daivina Na Palati Divya Kishora Murti. We have Kishore and Kishori here. So the fruit of firm bhakti into your lotus feet, Bhagavan, is that I will see your form as Kishore Kishori, Kishora Murti. And Mukti Swayam Mukulitanjali Sevate Asman, liberation herself is standing at my doorstep waiting to render service. And along with liberation, who are the maidservants of liberation? She has many maidservants. Dharamarta kama gataya samaya pratikshaha. They're standing and waiting. So we don't have to endeavor separately for these things. Through bhakti, we are liberated, but we must allow our bhakti to liberate us. This is the point. That's our volition. And real bhakti begins in the liberated state. Therefore, we find these shibboleths distributed throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, certain phrases that are just pregnant with meaning. And one of them, he says, is transcendental loving service. What does that mean, really? Think about it. It's very, very deep. Transcendental loving service. The certain components have to be involved here. Number one, it has to be transcendental, that we've been discussing. You have got to be liberated to engage in real bhakti. Before that point, you're engaged in what we call prakrita bhakti, or a shadow of bhakti, a semblance of bhakti, or material bhakti. Probate bhakti, I like to call it. Bhakti with training wheels. you have the sponsorship of a spiritual master, but you don't have the realization of what you're doing. That's a problem. In that stage, we're very tenuous anytime we can fall. And most of them do, therefore. So we must become liberated first. That's transcendental. Loving, this is the second aspect. You cannot sustain your position in this transcendental realm unless you actually enter deeply into a relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's called sambandha. Therefore, we worship Madan Mohan for that purpose. When we have all of our, understand our relationship, then we can sustain that relationship by practical service unto the lotus feet of Lord Kishore, Krishna Kishore. And that's also implies bhava bhakti. Putam ad bhavam agataha, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Bhava bhakti, raganuga bhakti. Ultimately, prema bhakti has to be there. There has to be real love only to sustain that liberated transcendental state. So, transcendental loving, and the last one is service. Service means what? You've got to do something. It's not just a sentiment. It's not just a realization. It's not just an imagined state of, higher consciousness. You have to actually work hard, because that's what it means to be a servant. Servant means you're running around doing things. Therefore, Prabhupada says a devotee actually should be engaged as if in the mode of passion, working very laboriously. He's cooking an offering for Krishna, he's distributing books for Krishna, he's whatever it is that we're doing, enlisting members, doing Harinam Kirtan. Prasadam is hard work to run a restaurant. Do we have a restaurant in Chicago? Should be so. In 1977, when they were touring the Manhattan skyscraper temple, Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Goswami, from now on, don't open any more temples. From now on, just open restaurants and reading rooms. Prabhupada wanted this. He saw, I think, the Christian Science people, they have the reading rooms. And Prabhupada thought that was a good idea. To combine those two is a better idea. You have a restaurant, reading room. Americans are not going to come any other way. It's been seen. Very, very unlikely. It's really, really hard work. But with a restaurant, it's very good. And prasadam works. We've discussed that. So, what were we saying? Yeah, you have to do something. You have to work hard. because that's what it means to be a devotee. Muktir hitvanya tharupam surupena vivastitihi. To be situated in your own natural position, that's the real meaning of liberation. And the natural position of all living beings is to serve Krishna. Jiver sharup hoy, Krishner nityo dash. Das means servant. So transcendental loving service implies this Brahma-Bhuta realization, and poor Shukracharya has failed this pariksha. And, we always get another chance, but who knows when it will be? After how many births? Who knows? So we have this opportunity now. And as one poet wrote, Jabalagataname tapana vyape tabalagakari hariseva. Do not waste your opportunity as long as you have a sound mind and body, because that's not going to last. Also, use it or lose it, as they say. You're not going to have this opportunity forever. So this is what Prahlad means when he says, Tadapi adhruvam arthadam. Although it's very temporary, this human form of life, it can give you a lot if you take advantage of it. So grab it and take advantage. We'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or any comments? Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. You had quoted two verses. One is Rishabhdev's instruction of don't become a father, a mother, or a leader, a spiritual master, etc. And the other verse, if I understood right, of Bilwa Mangal Thakur, that the third line of that was that in family matters one can be very... Was it in family matters?
Or responsibilities.
Responsibility.
In duties, obligatory, obligations, you could
correct.
Say.
And we find devotees, I guess myself included, that oftentimes in the name of... or in the spirit of forwarding the mission, such obligations or responsibilities take a backseat or feel as if they're being compromised. When on the one hand we have this instruction that one should not become a parent if they cannot help. So could you kindly provide some more light on... because you did mention in the if a person is just simply taking care of family in the context of Shukracharya, of course he was sold out. For those who are at least not sold out, want to serve Krishna, but they find their responsibilities also as important.
Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janah paripasate tesham nityabhyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. What's the other one? He says, I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. We have to have that faith in Krishna. And we have to understand what is Krishna's desire also. Krishna neither wants us to neglect our ordinary responsibilities within the world of dharma. He certainly doesn't want us to engage in the concoction that we might fashion as vikarma yoga. Which is the alternative to dharma. There's only two things in this world. There's dharma and there's adharma. That's it. There's nothing else in this world. When we take to Krishna consciousness, of course, we're trying to transcend this world, but we depend on this world, we depend on this body, we maintain this degree of prarabdha karma in order to become Krishna conscious. And we have to be responsible about that. You have to eat properly. He says this. Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu. Karmasu means in the matter of dharma. So, we want to bring our consciousness out of this, but we do not want to necessarily bring our activities out of this responsibility. And we will find, it's often a challenge to maintain our Krishna consciousness and to maintain our mundane responsibilities at the same time, because that's what it means to be a servant. It's hard work. I would say that the guiding principle should be that when we are over-endeavoring for mundane things that are difficult to obtain, for our sense gratification, selfish or extended, rather than for purification, selfish or extended, then that's wrong. When we are engaging in these same activities under the orders of the spiritual master for the purpose of purification of the heart in order to enable a more mature level of bhakti, then that's to be encouraged. And I think Prabhupada did encourage it. He saw that his disciples, due to immaturity or due to ignorance or both, they sometimes were, you know, they failed in the social realm. I had a very interesting conversation. I don't know if I mentioned it here the other day, but I was in Chennai speaking with one Iyengar Brahmana, Sri Vaishnava. And naturally, the conversation came around to ISKCON. And he was full of praise for ISKCON. He said that, you know, you people are so organized and you're so good at, you know, communicating very abstruse, high philosophical principles in ordinary language to ordinary people. And you're capable of organizing a worldwide missionary effort, and you have succeeded so nicely in, you know, communicating this theology into the population. But when it comes to social affairs, my circle and I feel that we don't really have very much to learn from you. Why did he say that? He said that because ISKCON has maybe a higher rate of divorce than the outside world does, because its members think that they're too transcendental. He said that perhaps because the GBC for the last 3 or 4 years has consistently allotted the majority of its funds to the Child Protection Office, which exists to protect ISKCON members against ISKCON members. And, you know, I mean, the implicit subtext here was very clear, and I could not argue with it. The subtext being that you're very good at communicating theology to the public, but you're not able to communicate it to your family members or to your own people. You cannot translate this theology into your work practices. In the Upadeshamritam, Srila Prabhupada has translated satovrite. Anybody know how does he translate this? Huh? Following in the footsteps of the predecessor acharyas, there, in other contexts, he's translated it differently because it's a very vague term. Satovritte means the behavior of those who are sat, the sadhus. You have to engage in your ordinary worldly dealings in a very saintly manner, in a sadhu, you know, no duplicity, no cheating, no, you know, nothing, you know, no dirt, basically. You know, this is very important. And I think that Prabhupada saw that his disciples had so many problems, you know, after some time, after several years, when this movement was well established, but still there were major problems even in his best people. And Prabhupada, he felt that if we emphasize the need for sacrifice, charity, and austerity, these being the active ingredients of dharma, then, you know, this problem can be alleviated in large measure. So it's a balance, and we have our spiritual masters to guide us, particularly with regards to the details. But in principle, a person should be very responsible in material affairs, but not for his own personal self-aggrandizement. If for himself at all, it should be for his own spiritual advancement in order to take advantage of what the human form of life has to offer. Otherwise, you know, then we fall prey to Shukracharya, who didn't have faith that Krishna would maintain him. This is the real thing. So Shraddha, Adao Shraddha. Is that okay? There's much more we can say. It's a big topic. Yeah. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna. I have a question regarding this point of brahmanas not selling out, compromising, etc. So I would say in ISKCON we have two types of brahmanas, or those brahmanas, initiated brahmins who do work outside and take their maintenance from the asuric corporations, employers, etc. You were saying that a real Brahmana wouldn't, and Prabhupada was saying, that a real Brahmana wouldn't take their maintenance from such sources. And the second Brahmanas being actually working full-time within the institution of ISKCON, we also hear that Brahmanas should not be inhibited from being independently thoughtful people. Prabhupada said that he wanted to create Brahmanas to put a head on society, and he wanted to create independently thoughtful people, which means Brahmanas. And we hear, like Chanyaka Pandit and others, they could speak very freely and not be concerned with political correctness because their position wasn't dependent on political correctedness. So we seem to have in ISKCON, though, our Brahmins are working outside, getting their sources from, getting their maintenance from Asuric sources, and we also seem to have Brahmanas who work within the institution, but are also wearing double or triple hats, so that they are very much involved in administration, politics, the executive, you know, department. So they're often inhibited from being independently thoughtful people because they have to be concerned with political correctness and climbing the corporate ladder, etc. So when Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing in his last years that we try to implement Daivi Varnashram, I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on this subject matter, because it seems that it's our own Brahmanas which need...
It seems what?
It seems like it's our own Brahmanas which need desperately to implement at least that part of Varnashram, that they actually become totally independent from institutional political correctedness and from external sources of maintenance, etc. And this has been a concern that I've had for a long time, and I would just like to hear your thoughts on the matter.
Many years ago, I met my godbrother Sureshwar Prabhu. He and Hare Krishna Dasi compiled a book about all of Prabhupada's quotes on the topic of Varnashram Dharma. And he told me that when we went into this project, we were assuming, we had the assumption that this Varnashram was a means that Prabhupada intended for us to encourage the outside people to, you know, maybe organize their lives and become a little sattvic and maybe become more favorable thereby to Krishna consciousness. He said, after we compiled all these quotes and studied them very carefully, we realized that they're all directed squarely at the initiated membership of ISKCON and are intended for the institution of ISKCON, for the most part. So that's one thing. I would not, you know, see things in this binary way that we're either talking about, you know, devotees working outside or devotees working in the institution. There's all kinds of devotees working in all kinds of ways. And at any rate, in and out is kind of hard to really nail down when you come down to it also. Srila Prabhupada's books say, and the traditional norm is also, the understanding is, that a Brahmana works in six ways. He's studying and teaching, he's performing worship and engaging others in that worship, and he's accepting charity and giving in charity. He's got these certain qualities in addition to that, that are defined in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita. And if the majority of these do not apply to a person's life that we see, then you have to question, what is that person's status? As far as a person becoming colored, I mean to say, by politics and other needs that as a result of his dedication or commitment to some sort of institutional position, well, that has to be judged, you know, by Krishna, I would think. It's not something that we like to do. Maybe the managers have to judge that, but You know, how does a manager judge a brahmana? A brahmana has to judge a brahmana. And, you know, this is probably, it's usually on a case-by-case basis that Prabhupada would judge these sorts of things. But it's certainly true that a person can lose his independence and lose his objectivity also when he becomes too much invested in entrenched interests. Some of them personal, some of them maybe not so personal, but political. That's a problem. We're going to read about that, I think, in the next verse. Politics. That's another topic. But generally, a Brahmin should stay out of that. Prabhupada, whenever it came to really political things, he backed out. He didn't want to go there. Because we're meant to emphasize these principles. And then, you know, how they apply in terms of concrete times, places, and circumstances, that's someone else's business. But the Brahmins have to, they should have the insight that they're able to emphasize these principles. And they understand what those principles are and why they exist and what the ultimate goal is. This the Brahmins can see better. So they should stay in their own realm and not try to meddle too much in other places.
When Hare Krishna Dasi and Sureshwar Prabhu were coming to that realization that Prabhupada actually meant these instructions for Varnashram to be implemented within the institution of ISKCON, I also read that book and I saw where Prabhupada was saying more than once that why are we giving Brahman initiation to so many devotees? It should actually just be a small percentage, those that are actually going to be brahminically engaged and brahminically qualified. So
there are Brahmins who focus on the absolute truth. There are Brahmins who focus on their livelihood, and there are Brahmins who focus on green cards.
So, when Prabhupada was emphasizing like this in the last years, do you think he was trying to get the message, or was he trying to say that we should try to implement now a system where Brahmanas don't do management and executive duties, and that we put trained kshatriyas to be kshatriyas and brahmanas to be brahmanas, and that we don't continue to wear 2, 3, 4 hats on our head?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can infer that, you can assume that, because it's quite clear if he keeps pushing very unequivocally on varnashram, and the roles of the different members of society are pretty much distinct and very clear. It's kind of hard to fit that in forever if you're really serious about making this application. There are many respected devotees, senior devotees that I've discussed this with, and you know they feel that this is going to take some time, so you know there's some leeway for that as well. You know, the ideal is there, and Prabhupada was pushing the ideals. And, you know, sometimes, you know, he wouldn't really get into the details so much. He quite often, in fact, said that, I'm giving you the basic principles, now it's up to you to develop it, the ideas, you know. Because what can he do in 10 or 11 or 12 years, you know? The time is limited, and you know, the maturity required from his disciples to even assimilate some of the instructions that he gave. How many instructions were lost because of the simple immaturity of the patra? You see, we talk about desha kala patra, time, place, and recipient. So, you know, when the patra is so immature, how much could really be assimilated? That's another question. How much we wish that Prabhupada were here, that we could consult him now when we have the wisdom of some experience, you know, to be able to assimilate what instructions he's given. Yamuna Devi gave a nice quote. It was from this book that was recently published by Dina Tanani, that, you know, we should be very careful that we hear Srila Prabhupada and really be sure that we understand what his instructions intend. I emphasized this the other day. Hearing is really the beginning of everything. We have to hear. And it's not a secret that most devotees in ISKCON don't take hearing very seriously from Srila Prabhupada. They haven't read all of his books. You know, I went to a program and the Bhakti Vriksha leader had not finished reading Bhagavad Gita. That's a problem. Because what are you going to teach? Weekend Brahmanas are not the ones who spread Krishna consciousness to the degree that Srila Prabhupada spread it. Nitya Sattvastho, Krishna says. So many places he says. He's always a yogi. In chapter 12, he says the same thing. This is the point. It has to be how are you going to always be acting like a Brahmana if you're going somewhere where you can't act like a Brahmana? And what's the consequences of that? That's the really scary thing. You have to do this. That's what it means to be a servant. We've discussed already. You actually have to serve. And the instruction may not seem feasible, may not be palatable, may not be easy, but you've got to do it. Krishna will help. And certainly he'll sustain you. A wise god sister, Govinda Dasi, she was Prabhupada's servant also, she knows. She told me that when you're doing what you're meant to do, then Krishna will always facilitate it. It will be done. But we don't believe that. We don't believe that the source of our paycheck is not the source of our maintenance. That's why we sell out. We don't believe in Vishvambhara, even though we meditate on his name 3 times a day. Dharmo rakshati rakshitaha, Manu says. The person who protects this thing is protected by it. Whether you see it as it or whether you see it as Krishna, it's the same thing. Krishna or his agent, it's the same thing, Krishna. Is that okay? Yes, in the back.
I remember Srila Prabhupada saying that, you know, we don't have time to make money. You know, we have a much loftier thing, and the material world's a network of illusion. Network of illusions, just deal with the material world as much as you have to. And then there was this one devotee, he was being hounded by the draft, and Prabhupada was encouraged him to write a letter and see if he could get out of it. And then he was able to get out of it. But Prabhupada, I think, was going to take it to another step, and he was going to use his genius to write them a letter, the draft board, in order to get him out. I don't know if you remember that.
Prabhupada was so bold. We're very timid, actually. When Prabhupada went to buy the Fisher Mansion in Detroit, he first asked the real estate agent to just give it to him outright as a donation, free.
Yeah.
Would you do that? We're so timid. Prabhupada had big plans, and he was very bold and fearless. We have to be like that, because he had such heavy faith, deep faith.
And then he offered him $300,000, but then he said, just one room's worth $300,000. So he was able to get it, you know. Thank you, Prabhupada.
So, yeah. Anything else? There's so much we can talk about here. But it's getting late. So thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
We have a MSF, Monthly Sankirtan Festival today. Everyone's invited. We'll be leaving at 10:30 for Harinam book distribution. Please join us. Thank you.